Welcome back to another edition of the Play Big podcast, where we're having conversations with people that are playing big in life, in business, and in money. And today I've got a longtime friend on the show with me today. It's Chris Felton. Chris, welcome to the show.
Jason, awesome to be here, brother. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. First question is, who is Chris Felton?
I'm a recovered CPA, fully recovered CPA. No, man, 52-year-old financial services entrepreneur, author, speaker. I live in Colorado to my second, current, and last wife, Marlo, and I have two amazing kids, 22 and 19.
Awesome. So what, tell me about the recovering CPA. What does that mean?
Oh, no, just spent 7 years in the accounting profession, the largest accounting firm in the world, before I launched to be a financial services entrepreneur. So it's just kind of a joke, man. Like, it's first steps denial, and then you go through a 12-step program, and then you're fully recovered.
Yeah, man. Tell me about the jump that you made then from CPA into the financial services world. Because a lot of people think that when they hear CPA, they would assume that's also financial services, but it's a little bit different. Tell me about the journey going from being a CPA into financial services.
Yeah, I mean, I was working 80, 90 hours a week. I was trading time for money. One of my turning points in my life, I worked 120 hours in a 6-day period to avoid working Easter Sunday, and which was my mom's like favorite holiday on the planet. And when I told her that, hey, I got this deadline that's falling the Monday after Easter Sunday, it looks like I'm going to have to work Easter Sunday. She kind of gave you that look that only a mother could give you, right? Which is like,
death stare.
Your ass better be here for Easter brunch or else. Figure it out. So I did. And I didn't sleep. I drank lots of coffee. We got the job done 11 o'clock on Saturday night. And so the night before Easter Sunday, and I come home and my brother's waiting up for me, and we had a family intervention between him and my 6'4", 250-pound brother. And he was just like, what are you doing, man? Like, why are you doing this? And you and I are big time into personal growth and personal development. And I love this concept called hypnotic rhythm, where we just are hypnotic about our thoughts. And so sometimes we just need to kind of wake up. And he asked the question of, why are you doing what you're doing? And I couldn't answer it. And we got in a big argument. And so the next day I sat down and I actually, for the first time, grabbed a book called Think and Grow Rich and started reading through that. And then understood that most people have no real clue what they want to get out of their life. They're not super clear. And so I spent an afternoon, Jason, just kind of writing out my ideal life. And then I just called it, looking back, I called it the moment of truth. It was, I could either stay in the vehicle that I was in and never have that ideal life and then get to the end of my life. I'm not afraid of a lot of things, but I'm afraid of getting to the end of my life and having regrets. And so I could either play it safe, stay in that vehicle and give up on that ideal life, or go find the vehicle that was going to get me that. And I knew I had to be an entrepreneur. I knew I just could no longer work 9 to 5. I just couldn't do it. So it was really that dream that I wanted that led me to financial services. I wasn't looking for it, but it led me to it. And so anyway.
How long did that process take? Well, first of all, congratulations for going through the process, because I think a lot of times people would be asked a question, and especially from family, and completely discount it and move in the opposite direction, or dig their heels in even harder to prove a point. But how long did that process take from that conversation to you grabbing a book to doing the hard work, which is the internal work of, man, what is it that I really want to do? What is it that I'm really going after? And I think what that imagery of what you said is that you knew you had the fear that you didn't want to get to the end of your life and have led a life with regret. And I think that's extremely powerful. But how long did that internal process take for you approximately?
I have lots of shortcomings, but one thing I have going for me is I don't jack around. I don't mess around. I'm super proactive and I jump on stuff when I get intuitive hits, so to speak. And so that process started literally the next day of, what do I want? but I started looking at lots of different businesses and none of them made sense to me. So it was from that time until I took my first step into financial services. That was about 10 months, but there was a lot of kissing a lot of frogs along the way for sure.
And the entrepreneurial journey for you, because a lot of people, they have dreams or aspirations that they would like to work for themselves until they find out what that actually means and all the struggle and heartache that you got to also be able to sell and build a team and do all kinds of different things with that. How did you find, once you landed on financial services, talk to me about that journey of, was it immediate success for you or was it a slow process for you or was there a lot of ups and downs in the beginning? Or I really want to focus on the beginning part of how it started for you.
Yeah, I mean, I was shown a business, especially around financial services, where there was about a 50-minute overview of what I was there for, but the concept that was painted to me was the opportunity for waking up on January 1st and your recurring revenue is greater than your bills and your expenses. And that was really the first step of financial freedom and financial independence. And so out of a 45-minute talk, there was about a minute and a half conversation around that. And I'm like, I want that, right? I want freedom. I want financial freedom. Because my parents, my mom passed away with $10,000 to her name at 64. My dad died at 88, broke. And even though I was a CPA and a financial advisor, I was on that path. I had bad money programming, bad money beliefs and those things. So I really hung on to that kind of vision and dream, call it hand of God along the way, right? But I just kind of stayed with what was in front of me and the steps in front of me. Like I had the dream, but I just was like the next thing, next thing, next thing, the next thing, the next thing, the next thing I needed to learn, the next test I needed to pass. So ego wants you to get way into the future and wants you to get overwhelmed about what you need to do, right? You're standing at base camp looking up at Mount Everest. Right. And your fight or flight, your 100 million year old reptilian brain kicks in and it's just easier to put it off, procrastinate, hesitate, do those things. So the blessing was I just kind of stayed and kept in front of me. But, you know, I spent the first year talking people out of doing business with me, dude. Like I was awesome at that. Like I was.
Let me give you a reason why you shouldn't do business.
Yeah, I was the master at that. And so, no, it was a struggle, man. Like I said, I'm a CPA. I joke about it, but you know, I'm more comfortable with my computer and my spreadsheets and my little comfort world of crunching numbers and figuring out that stuff versus now I got to encourage somebody to do business with me. So,
right.
No, it was, I made $8,000 my first year. And
$8,000 your first year.
Yeah. So I had all the evidence on the planet to quit my partner path at my CPA firm. I've been there 7 years. I was fast tracking. So I had all the evidence in the world to leave that behind and go full time. But that's what I did. I jumped in and I had 6 weeks worth of savings in the bank. I wouldn't recommend anybody do that. You don't need to do that, but that's what I did.
That's a lot of people would say, man, that's crazy to do that. But I think what you laid out was that it was a very interesting point that sometimes goals are like the future oriented thing. Like you have this goal that, like you said, you wanted to wake up on January 1st and know that your residual income was going to be greater than your expenses for that year. And so that's like a goal that isn't there at the moment. And goals are like future focused. Well, there's something about what you were talking about is that you just kept focusing on the next thing. And to me, those are standards. Like in order to hit a goal, you have to have a daily standard, something that you are doing every single day. And the compounding of that creates a massive momentum. But how did you do that for yourself? What was the internal process for yourself to just keep going, just focusing on the next thing in front of you, then the next thing in front of you, then the next thing in front of you, having the hope and dream that at some moment there would be a breakthrough moment. But tell me about how you built that resilience in yourself to just stay focused on the next thing. Was that something you've always had, or is that something that you just learned in the process, or you just had, you're attached to this dream so strong, or where did that come from for you?
I mean, you're an expert in this, and most people are. It's, you got to have those crazy reasons of why you want to do it, right? I mean, it's just, if you're trying to get from point A to point B and you have a Ferrari, the Ferrari is useless without fuel, and fuel is reasons, right? I mean, David Goggins, right? I mean, he's like the perfect example. If you really read some of the stuff he's put out, right? I think he calls it the cookie jar, right? Like he's got to have the cookies in the jar, but every time he wanted to quit, he would go into the cookie jar and pull out a reason and keep him moving forward. And he trained Navy SEALs. And he's like, the best athletes, they're not the ones that get through it. It's the guy that you don't think that has lots of reasons. So I think a lot of people get too caught up in the path of things. But anytime I've faced significant challenges in my life, my tendency is to left brain spreadsheet, figure it out, which I think you absolutely got to have. I'm a preparer, I'm a planner. But what I learned is high performers and world-class players have really significant, compelling emotional reasons.
Right.
So for me, it was like that financial independence, this financial freedom. Like I wanted that like oxygen because I was sick of being broke. I was struggling financially. I was sick of that feeling. I hate financial stress. But, you know, it was pretty unpopular what I was doing. So I had those villains too. And so I needed to prove it to myself that I could do it. And there was a slew of people that I had to prove wrong. And so anytime it was like, oh, you should just go get a job, or you should just do this, you should do that. Like, I'd actually play in my memory. I just close my eyes. I'm a big imaging visualization freak.
Yeah.
But I would close my eyes and I would visualize myself coming across a hater and them asking me how my business was going and me going, well, it just didn't work out. Right. And then, I'd puke in my mouth and then I'd get back on the phone and like,
I'm gonna give them the satisfaction.
Dude, there's just no way. There was no way. I had way too many reasons. And anytime I'm not inspired or motivated or feel that way, like I'm good at finding reasons to persevere.
To keep going. And so that first year, 8,000, what was the second, third year like for you? Do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a bit, but when I made the decision to go full time and the former founder of that firm launched an incentive to kind of go to the next level and basically become a partner in that firm. And I didn't understand all this stuff, but in hindsight, I understood that desire is significant. And so, so I was still at my job and he did a conference call and said, hey, here's the incentive, do it. And I felt it, like I felt I was on fire.
Right.
And then my trainer called me and he said, hey, when are you gonna get this done? It was early 2000. It's been a while. And I said, I'll get it done by the end of December. And he said, no, you got to do it by June. And so I understood in hindsight the power of being lit up and being inspired. But I also understood the power now of getting challenged and accepting the challenge. And so from that moment on, I was on fire, right? And one of my most favorite topics in personal growth and development is decision. It's one of my favorites. So when people rock or they hit something or hit a big goal, I've asked hundreds of people this, Jason, when did you make the decision?
Right. Great question.
And then I always challenge him. I'm like, go back. Cause I'm a big journaler. I think Tony Robbins talks about chocolate cake recipes, right? We all kind of have our own recipe of things. So I want to capture as much in my journals and my recipe box, because I love it when I ask people, what were the conditions that created the decision, right? What were the conditions? And if they can go back and they can capture the conditions, then they can create the conditions to make the decision, right? But it's that decision of that things aren't going to be the same again. And you enter this phase, it's called enthusiasm. And it's the best definition of enthusiasm. It's joy combined with a goal.
Joy combined with the goal equals enthusiasm. I love that.
Yeah, equals enthusiasm. And you're a freaking arrow towards the target. and you're just in this zone and you're doing crazy activity and you look like a madman, mad woman. Everyone thinks you're crazy, but you're just, you're in this zone. But initially a decision, the momentum that created the enthusiasm. And so anyway, so that announcement from our former CEO, the challenge by my coach and my mentor flipped me into decision and flipped me into enthusiasm. And so for the, over the next 90 days, that 90 day period, I replaced my income.
So it's gone from $8,000 a year to, I know your story. I mean, you've made millions and millions and millions of dollars over that lifetime. So for multiple decades, how have you continued to maintain that persistence, to maintain that? Some people, when they start to have success, they plateau or they cool off, or sometimes they go backwards. What has allowed you over two decades to continue to go do the things that you do and continue to grow and increase your, not only your capability, but increase your capacity, increase your ability to influence and increase your ability to empower and lead other people that are looking for a similar situation? What continues to keep you going all for two decades?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the consistent reminders of what you're going after. I mean, it's just making sure that Ferrari always has fuel in it. And I'm psycho about my morning routine. I'm psycho about, I did it today. I almost never miss it. Just taking 5 minutes and just kind of playing this movie in my mind of my ideal life and making sure. I had a mentor. He challenged me a couple of years ago. He's like, what are your top 25 dreams? And I was like,
I have one.
He's like, oh, you're dream flat. He's like, that's better than most people who are dream dead. And this guy's a billionaire. Right. And he's like, I wake up in the morning and I'm dreaming, bro. I'm in the shower. I'm dreaming. And he's like, I never stop dreaming. And so I took that to heart. And excuse me, he's in his 70s and he's more after than he ever has been. So you're the grown or dying thing. Like it's real, right?
I think a lot of people think that they hear things like that, or like, oh, that's so cliche, until you actually are living it and breathing it and take things that are cliche. They're cliche for a reason. It's because they've been around. It's like time tested values that are actually true, that hold the test of time.
Yeah. And I'm a student of me, right? I'm a student of my patterns that create self-sabotage, and I know your ego is not your amigo, and my ego wants me. I actually caught it over the weekend. It's a chapter in my book, Don't Retreat, right? Like this concept that our ego wants to tell us is, oh, one day I can just kind of pull back and I can just kind of chill, and there's absolutely no happiness there. Now, I'm not saying you can't have fun. You can't enjoy it, you can't take trips, can't do that stuff. But if you're not growing and after it, it's just, and it's the dopamine hit is when you're on the path, right? It's not actually when you hit it. I mean, the best analogy I have on that is the afternoon after Christmas morning's there's kind of a drop in energy, right? Versus the move up until Christmas morning is this energy and this excitement. And so I just want to feel like I'm always moving. And you and I, you've blessed gobs of people, right? And when someone comes up to you and says, hey, you inspired me to do this, you did this, you did that. Like, I try to just take a little snapshot in my mind so that when my ego's like, nah, I'm like, well,
I got evidence.
I got some evidence that if I kind of keep rocking it, it's going to bless more people. So pulling back and chilling just doesn't really get it done.
That's right. You recently wrote a book not too long ago called Think and Grow You. If you don't have the book, you need to go get the book. But I've really enjoyed going through this book. Obviously, there's a lot of things I could talk about, but talk to me about why did you write a book, number one? Then talk to me about the process of writing this book, Think and Grow You.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote it because I was a mess. you know, from my story, like I had some success, I made some money, I did some things, I moved up in this pretty large organization, but I went through a divorce. My kids were little, they lived on the other side of the country, and I basically laid down in the divorce because I felt so guilty. And dude, I accumulated $250,000 of credit card debt to pay off my ex-wife, to keep the boat going. I signed a 6,000 square foot office lease that I couldn't afford. Once again, financial services entrepreneur entering the Great Recession. And yeah, dude, it was a crap show. Being a CPA and financial advisor, I just put a LinkedIn article out last week. It says, why are there so many smart, talented, broke people? Because there's a lot of them. Yes. And I was one of them. And so the turning point of my life was I was totally out of money. I had to pay my ex-wife $5,200 every month, and I had to pay her the next day. My wife, Marlo, was so beside herself because I looked smart. I gave pretty speeches. She kind of felt that she fell for a BS story. And I thankfully, intuitively was told to let her handle the finances of the house and the business, which was really hard for me to give up control, but I did it because I started understanding intuition. So she got fully in on what the freak is going on and how'd you create this mess. So Jason, I had to come home and ask her to give me her money to pay my ex-wife.
What was the emotion that was going through your whole body at that moment?
Well, I thought she'd do it because I was her soulmate, and my wife's 5'1" and everyone's afraid of her. And so she loses it. Hurricane Marlo's no bueno. And dude, she threw her purse at me. What kind of woman throws a purse? A pissed off woman. Not once, not twice, but three times. And we're having the fight of our lives because she's like, how? You're a CPA, your financial advisor. She's like, how is this possible? Counting on her fingers, doing all those things that just doesn't work. And I said, why are we still married? So she goes upstairs to figure out that for the rest of the night. And there I am. And all I could see, literally, Jason, were just dominoes falling in my life of, oh, my first marriage. And this was a very awakening moment for me because I'm like, oh, my first marriage failed because I expected it to fail. And one of my favorite quotes is, you don't get what you hope for, you get what you expect.
Wow.
And most people hope positive, but they expect negative. And really, what are you expecting? I always ask myself that. What are you really expecting to happen in your heart of hearts? My kids, I couldn't see them. I was too broke. I was drinking a bunch. My health was a mess. And I realized the common theme to everything was me.
Yeah.
I'm a denominator.
Tough pill to swallow. Tough reality to face.
Yeah. So in that moment, just I owned it. I owned all of it. I'm like, you created all of it. And so the next day we came together and she's like, I'm keeping you. We're not getting divorced. We're not declaring bankruptcy. We're not getting jobs. We're going to figure it out. And we had access to some wealthy mentors. She said, I'm going to call all of them. I'm going to figure out what they do, what they think. Our first book, Couples Money, came from that. We wrote that in 2011. And she's kind of like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, I'm going to figure out how this is creating this.
Wow.
And dad's broke, mom's broke, grandma's broke, grandpa's broke. I'm doing it. I'm not interested. I'm committed. She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, I've been interested, which is, Jason, most people are interested.
Correct.
And the problem is when you're just interested and if you don't have reasons, you hit resistance, you hit brick walls, and then you do what most people do is you take chicken exits.
Right.
You try to find these. I'm like, I'm committed. She's like, what does that look like? I'm like, an Olympic athlete treats their sport. That's going to be me with my mindset around money. Mm-hmm. And my ass is going to be up every morning, 4:30, 5 a.m., and I'm going to journal. I'm going to read everything. I knew money. I didn't know mindset on money. I'm going to read the books. I'm going to journal. I'm going to pull out every belief, almost like a PGA Tour player remaking their golf swing, right? I'm like, I'm psychotic about this. And then I hired a coach for 4.5 years who was just a godsend to me. And so didn't happen overnight, but it happened over time. And we had a jaw-dropping financial transformation. So anyway, I thought that backstory is kind of important.
It's extremely important. I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, it answered. So, you know, so the reason I wrote the book was I know what it feels like to feel that way. Right. I know what it feels like to be really stuck. And I think people are more stuck than ever. And to be so stuck that you think the only way out is quitting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm super empathetic towards that because I was that close, but I didn't. And so instead of quitting, I just challenged myself to grow and develop and to change. And so I wrote it because really the book is all about areas in my life where I was really stuck.
It's a raw representation of you and your story. And I admire your candor in the book and your willingness to share the story, because I think testimonials are what fuel people, right? And they can find themselves in your testimony, multiple testimonies throughout the entire book of, yeah, what did it actually feel like? What it was that you're actually going through, and how you switched it for yourself, but more importantly, how it can be helpful to other people. So well done on your book here.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy. Yeah. I mean, that's why I wrote it. I hoping somebody uses it as a resource because books were huge for me, man. Like when I was really stuck, I would grab something off the shelf and I would, you know, take a time out, might take 30 minutes or an hour. And I'm like, I'm not leaving until I shift my thinking.
That's right. So
I was praying that my book would do that for some others.
I have no doubt that it has, and that it continue well. I mean, there is 50 chapters in here. I want to pull out some things that really stuck with me. I mean, there's a lot of things throughout your book that stuck with me. But the thing that I love is you broke it up into five pillars. And so I'm just going to ask you a question or about a chapter of each of the pillars that really, really spoke to me. The first one is chapter 8, where it talks about don't wrestle with your ego. And you said the three most destructive thought patterns are the three R's, right? Resentment, resistance, and revenge. Talk to me a little bit about how those three R's showed up in your life, because I think they show up in a lot of people's lives, but not wrestling with your ego. I this chapter really, really jumped out to me on it, because I love having conversations with people about the difference between their ego and their spirit. But talk to me about the three R's.
Yeah, I mean, it's a concept. I did a lot of work with PSI seminars, PSI seminars, and that's where I learned it, was just, you know, this resentment, resistance, and revenge. And one of the things I had to really get a hold on was I had to really buy the fact that my thoughts created my world. Like, I knew that. I gave pretty speeches on it, but I had to really, and it was a formula one of my coaches taught me, was me plus a thought equals a result, right? So me plus a thought equals a result. If I don't like my result, there's me and my thinking. And so I just have to shift my thinking, whether it's around money or sales or health or relationships or whatever. So I have and am now, and it's a world-class mindset techniques called metacognition, and it's the ability to think about what you think about. Mm-hmm. And high performers and world-class players use metacognition. What am I actually thinking about? Because if you can make the unconscious conscious and really understand what you're thinking about, and you're curious around it, then you can actually change and shift it. So with all this stuff, the whole resentment, resistance, revenge thing, resent, resist, revenge. And people, like, they think revenge is, you know, I'm going to hit them, I'm going to yell at them. But for me, my biggest revenge is the thoughts about that other person that go out. And my mentor was like, quit throwing out poop covered boomerangs. What's the problem with throwing out a poop covered boomerang?
Yeah, it comes back and hits you
back. And that was my life, dude. So I had so much resentment towards my ex-wife. I don't know, maybe we'll get into some forgiveness stuff too. I mean, I just made a transition from that old firm in the last 6 months, and holy crap, man, the judgment that came my way.
Right.
Right. And I'm like, dude, don't fall for the 3 hours, bro. I mean, and also very easy to say, I'm going to set the record straight. I'm going to set them straight. I'm going to show them. I'm like, I was at least smart enough to like not do that. But I'm like, if you even start going towards judgment, resenting these people and judging them and sending that stuff out, you're going to have the poop cover boomerangs coming back. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm
not just one, but multiple.
Yeah. Multiple. And I'm far from perfect on this, man, but like one of the forever projects I've done a pretty damn good job on is just staying super mindful of judgment, like judging others, judging myself. Like, dude, that is really Shirzad Shamin in his book, Positive Intelligence, calls judgment public enemy number one. And you see it in society today, big time, but so just that judgment. Anyway, so I don't know if I answered your question or not, but it was really just that awareness of like, dude, you're on a slippery slope. Like you can't get sucked into this.
Right.
Because you can't, because you're so close to the edge financially. You're so close to failure. Like I said, people like, if somebody broke into your house at 3 a.m, how aware would you be? That's what I was like with my thoughts. I was like, nope, can't have that. Change that, shit that, do this, do that. So 3 hours is really, it's the most destructive thought pattern.
The next one I want to talk about is on the opposite side of it, because it's grow spiritually. And I love this chapter, but in particular, I'm going to read what you wrote. It said, our spirit focuses on serving others. It makes us feel that life is worthwhile and we aren't some random mistake. We are here for a reason and meant to contribute. I find that those statements extremely powerful, because I think oftentimes people don't feel like that they have a worth, and they will only equate their worth maybe to a dollar sign or what their bank account looks like. And it's one of the things that bothers me the most, and why I go out and educate and do what I do, is because I want to remind people that they do have a worth. And I love that you had put that in here, is that you're not a mistake, that there is something, there is a reason that you're here. Talk to me about what does it mean to grow spiritually for you personally?
Yeah, I mean, we are spiritual beings having a human experience, right? And for me, I'm Christian, and you are too. And it doesn't matter where you land on that. But I think for me, it's kind of, I mean, this is what's coming to me. Like, I don't know, like Deion Sanders, like, I don't know if you ever heard what he talked about. Like, after he won, I don't know, his third or fourth Super Bowl, like, he was kind of like, is this it? Like, the night of winning the Super Bowl, he was so disappointed. He went to bed at like 8 o'clock at night. He's just like, because he, there was something missing. And it was really this spiritual connection, this spiritual side, this something more than us. And so for me, I just kind of paid attention to these jings, these, your ego's loud and obnoxious and spirit's soft and quiet. And that's why I've worked really hard at trying to quiet my brain, because I want to hear more of that. Right. So for me is that I want to continue to unfold the spiritual side and the loving side and the giving side. And I can get my own way around that as well. But if you want to change your life, schedule it. And I have quiet, uninterrupted time in the morning to do just that. And when I don't, I'm out of sorts. And when I think I'll find fulfillment in stuff, you won't. That connection is, I mean, I don't know. It's just necessary. So I don't know if I answered that all the way, but
I think that it's important, because I think oftentimes people don't want to talk about it, because it's not the fast track to something, or fast track to riches and fast track to success and things like that. But it's at the end of the day, it's the thing that means the most, right? It's people want to feel like that they have worth, that their life has a meaning, that they're here for a reason. And I think it goes back to what you said at the very beginning, is that you don't want to get to the end of your life and feel like you've lived your life with regret, or that you chased all the things that actually at the end of the day don't mean that much. They make impact for certain. Money makes impact for certain, and it makes life more enjoyable, and to have experiences that you otherwise couldn't have, and not to have stress or anxiety or fear or worry or doubt like most people have. So financial freedom, financial security is important, but spiritual freedom and spiritual security is of way more importance if you could have one or the other. So I love that you put that in there. And I love that you pursue it daily, and that it's something that fuels you, that keeps you going, that keeps the resilience, that everyone's life isn't perfect. The Deion Sanders example is a perfect example, because I think that oftentimes my experience of running across people that have had ultra success, but they're missing the spiritual side to their life. They get trapped in a looping game called "this isn't it, is it?" And they think that maybe it's just a bigger house or a nicer car or a very nice watch or whatever it is, but they get it, and then they realize, well, that's not it. Something is still missing. And so that's why I've dedicated my life to educating and empowering people, predominantly to fill that void, that build your spirit. Like you deserve to know what it feels like to go after your dreams and after your destiny in an authentic way, to be authentically you. That's why I love this conversation. That's why I loved reading through your book. I'm like, man, this is... It's been many years since you and I sat down and had a long conversation, but it reminds me of, man, why do I like Chris Felton? And, you know, it comes across on these pages of these books and reminds me of conversations, just who you are as an individual, as a human being that has been willing to put your life on display in a book that I think, like I said, I think it's going to help a lot of people. The next one I want to talk about is called Be a Spark. I'm going to read this too, because you're powerful in your descriptions in these chapters. And the thing I love about these chapters is they're quick chapters, and they also have thought-provoking questions in them and little places of resources to it. But in the chapter, Be a Spark, you said you do have value in insight to share. People are stuck in their thinking, and sometimes we just need to be a spark. We don't need to be some powerful, almighty leader. Listening and asking a question could be the spark that they need. It could shift their dysfunctional paradigm and create a totally new perspective. And I love that, because I think people feel like they're going back to the, I'm not worthy. I don't know how to lead other people. I don't even have my own life figured out. What right do I have trying to lead somebody else down a path? But I love the fact that even just the ability to ask a question to someone, even like, what was the context when you made the decision? A simple question is something that could be a spark. Talk to me about how the spark and the understanding that you don't need to be some massive, all-powerful leader, but just the ability to ask questions. How has that shaped your life?
It took the pressure off me to be somebody that I wasn't yet, right? Do what you do from where you are. I think people, okay, well, once I'm this and once I'm that, and once I have this and once I have that, then I'll be ready, right? And that's your ego not being your amigo again, right? And so being in the personal development space and having some routine, whether it's 20 minutes, 30 minutes, or an hour in the morning, I ask empowering questions. There's three questions I ask myself every day, and it's, how can I grow? What can I give? What can I celebrate, right? How can I grow? What can I give? What can I celebrate? And it's kind of how I wrap up my morning meditation and thinking. And so praying for spirit to guide me to find situations where I can be of value. I mean, I was doing that even though, who am I? I'm $250,000 in debt. Who am I? I'm probably a business failure at that point. Who am I? But spirit can speak through me.
Correct.
To the other person. And I did it before we got on here, and I do my best before I have to interact with somebody. I ask spirit to think through me, live through me, love through me, speak through me, think through me, live through me, love through me, speak through me, think through me, live through me, love through me, speak through me. So I attempt to do that before I have an interaction with any person. And that's so awesome. You might not be all that in a bag of chips, but you are spirit, and spirit can speak through you if you don't stop it. And so you can get tremendous wisdom come through you if you just set the intention that I want to serve this other person, just speak through me.
Right.
So, and you've experienced it. I mean, I've been in meetings and from judgment, the most ridiculous person says the most brilliant thing.
Correct.
I'm like, is that like, they don't even like themselves. Like they have a low self-esteem. They have low self-image. Do you think that was human?
Right.
No, that was spirit. Right. And early on, I got feedback from some of the most ridiculous people, but they were right.
Right.
Right. They didn't have success. They didn't have this. They didn't have that. But, you know, one just kind of brought up, he's like, yeah, you kind of make it all about you. I was like, dude, I still remember that. That's 24 freaking years ago. This guy was in my business for 2 weeks.
Wow.
He's like, you kind of make it all about you. I was like, never forgot that.
Yeah.
But that was a spark. So anyway, that's, I don't know if I answered your question or not, but you letting spirit come through you and just that spark. And I said something, someone's like, oh my God, you said that and my life transformed, and they did the work, but that was the point. I was just the spark. They built the fire, but anybody can do that. You just got to be intentional about it.
I love the word intention, because I think that really is what allows a spark to happen or allows something to come through you, is setting the intention that you want to help somebody else, right? And it's not about you. It's not about the ego. It's about the spirit side. Are you willing to serve other people? Not counting yourself less than just because you financially may not stack up, or business-wise may not stack up, or leadership-wise, or wherever you are. Anyone can impact somebody. But as long as you have the spiritual intention that you do want to give something to someone, you want to help someone grow, you want to help be a giver, and you want to be able to do those things. And it also gets to the next chapter, when you go from ego to spirit to money. And I love that the title of this chapter is, you said, respect money. You said, respecting money is imperative to financial success. You and your money are in a relationship, and your bank account reflects its health. That's such a powerful statement. Disrespectful attitudes create dysfunctional relationships. Acquiring wealth is hard work, and that effort deserves respect. How did your financial success, or the changing of your financial environment, change as a result of you respecting money? I mean, obviously, you understood money. You're a CPA. You said earlier, I think, which is extremely powerful, is like the mindset around money, which is crazy, because a lot of making money, keeping money, multiplying money, having wealth has more to do with psychology than anything else. But talk to me about respecting money. I love that phrase, respect money.
Well, it was from Marlo's work interviewing all these mentors of ours. They had a healthy respect for money, right? It's not the love of money, but it was the respect of money. And I'm like, I didn't have respect for money. I had loose change everywhere. She wouldn't say, oh, it's just Chris. Oh, it's just my husband. Like that's a relationship that's not going to work very well, right? If that relationship doesn't have respect, it's not going to work. Well, money's the same. And so most people, you couldn't find these gajillionaires that she interviewed, you couldn't find them saying, oh, it's only $5. That wasn't the case. I mean, she was in property management for years, decades before, and she'd go into a home that got evicted, or a renter that got evicted, she'd find loose change everywhere.
Right.
Like they didn't respect pennies and dollars and all that. Once again, it's not about worshiping it, but what I realized was, and it was, I was reading Secrets of a Millionaire Mind. I'd been through it freaking 15 times. And he says in there, T.R. Becker, until you start managing the money that you have now well, you won't see anymore.
Right.
And that was like, and so immediately, we still have it. I found a jar. Dude, I'm $250,000 in debt, right? I find a glass jar and I put a sticky note on it, Felton Financial Freedom Jar, and I put the sticky note on it, and I took my $10 of loose change and poured it into it. And I'm like, and then everyone's like, what's that going to do? Well, that was the first move. That was me saying, you know what? I'm a good steward of what I got. I respect what I have. I respect the blessings. Now I'm opening myself up for bigger blessings.
Right.
And so that was a small step, but it was a big move. And then just from there, we just started looking at respecting money and not blowing money and not having money leak out of our lives. And that's a whole nother show, but that was the transformation. That was the first step in the move to financial freedom was that.
Respecting money. I love it. Last question on the book. And I got another question I want to ask you, but this last chapter, you leave it with, it's worth it. And I love that this is how you finished your book, is it's worth it. But you classify people in three different buckets, basically. You talk about the quitters, you talk about the people with the chicken exit, and then you talk about the achievers that have an until mindset about them. Explain to me the difference between being the quitter, the one with the chicken exit, and then the person that just is until.
Yeah, I mean, the quitter just, they don't expect it to work out, right? They're just like hoping to get lucky. They have almost a lottery mentality. So they're hoping it'll work, but they're expecting that it won't.
Right.
And there's not a lot you can do for those people. But the people with the with the chicken exit, right, they're looking for the easy way. They're like, I'm going to do this, but if it doesn't work, then I'm going to do that.
Right.
Right. They got plan B. And I've been in and out of that. And I know when I'm entering kind of a danger zone in my entrepreneurial journey is when I start looking at other businesses and mm-hmm. I start thinking there's a better way to go. And once again, I'm just mindful, metacognition, thinking about what I'm thinking about. I know that's a trap for me and I just got to pull it back. But the high performers know that they take the mentality of until, right? Where it's, you've heard this a million times, but you know, unconscious incompetence, conscious competence, right? Unconscious competence, meaning you don't know that you suck and then you fail and you realize you're not very good. And then you start doing the work and the skills and getting the coaching and the mentoring until it becomes unconscious, just anything right. You've done. Walk, drive a car. I'm not a pilot, but the pilots have to go through that process of really doing the work at the conscious competence level until it becomes unconsciously competent, where you right. don't even remember driving your car. So high performers are like, yeah, I get I suck. I realize it, but I'm willing to do the work until it becomes unconsciously competent and I basically become a master.
Right.
And that's it. So their phraseology is until. Quitters are like, yeah, probably won't work out. The chicken right. exits are, well, if it doesn't, I got plan B. High performers have no chicken exit. They're like, I'm just going to do the work until. So the phrase is until.
I love it. I'm going to ask you about another moment that you wrote in this book, Think and Grow You, because I actually had to stop after I read this part of your book. And it was the story about your son playing basketball and you're waiting for an email or a notification that he got accepted to college, a very specific college that yep. he was interested in attending. And it was in the middle of the basketball game. You got the email and you screamed in during the middle of the basketball game, but then you had an encounter with your ex-wife at that basketball game yep. that was pretty emotional. If you could tell me about that, tell me about that moment. In your life.
It's still emotional, as you could tell. In the chapter on forgiveness, it was my coach that was, you need to forgive her or you're going to be broke and miserable your entire life. And I didn't understand that. And I think that's the other reason Jason God put the book on my heart is people suck at forgiveness and sure. They're really bad at it. And he started the process of, hey, I want you to, in your morning routine, I want you to write her name down on a pad of paper. And I want you to write down everything that you appreciate about her, which was really hard to do, but I did it and it got easier and easier and easier. And then my whole perception of her started to change, but we did not have a good marriage and it was because of me. I mean, she contributed, but that marriage was going to be a failure because of me. And then just the challenges of my kids being at a distance. I'm in Colorado, they're in Atlanta, and that those were reasons to really knock it out of the park financially. But just that forgiveness, and I have a chapter in the book of her remarrying, and I had to really accept that there's going to be another guy raising my kids. And just all that came together, just the letting go of all the garbage and stopping the 3 R's. And I haven't had a negative thought about her in forever. And just that moment when my kid gets into Vanderbilt and I run it, and there she is by the gym door, and I just gave her a big hug and I said, good for you. And she said, no, good for us. And right then and there, I was just like, oh my God, man, I'm so grateful that I stuck with this, man, that I took myself on. I did the work. I allocated that time every day for decades. Right. And my kids are 22 and 19. I mean, just killing it. And they're just great kids, great loving kids. They treat their girlfriends great. They treat other people great. They don't have entitlement. But in that moment, I was just like, oh my God, man, what if I would have just retreated and quit, right, and just stayed in that crap and resented her forever. And so it was just an amazing moment, man. An amazing, you think the payoff might be a home or a car or boat or plane or whatever, but that was a big payoff, man.
Yeah, payoff's amazing testimony and powerful story. Congratulations again for writing such an open, literal open book into your life. And yeah, man, good for you. Good for you. Good for your family. Good for everyone that you've been able to help. If people want to find out more about you or find you somewhere, where's the best place for them to go see or find Chris Felton?
Yeah. Chrisfelton.me is my website. And there's the book, Keynote Talks. I mean, that book was written in a way that I come into organizations and they're like, hey, I want you to hit on these 3 or 4 points, half day workshop, full day workshop, please cover these items. So that's why I wrote the book the way it was, is I can really custom tailor a message to fit the crowd. Yep.
It's awesome. Thank you for being on the show. And until next time, everyone, always ride the wave of life and always play big.
Thank you for watching the show. If you've enjoyed what you've been listening to, I ask that you subscribe and share the content. Until then, always ride the wave of life and always play big.